Coming up, we've worked hard to bring you another great episode. You know what would make my day? If you listen, yes, but you can really make me smile by subscribing. You can go to offthenose.com or on whatever platform you're using right now. They all have that little subscribe button. Go there right now, click that, and boom, happy Kelly. If that's not enough, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Insta and Twitter. You can share the episode with your friends or colleagues. So many options to show your love. But let's just start simple and subscribe today, right now. Don't put it off. You guys rock. Hey everyone, on today's episode, we have a really unique guest, a creativity expert. Nir Bashan is on the show today. He is the author of The Creator Mindset, coming out shortly. And he's going to teach us all how to be more creative. Maybe you thought you weren't creative. Well, guess what? We are all born with creativity. It just slowly dissipates for all these crazy reasons. But creativity is what you need. Creativity is what the world needs today more than ever. So we're going to hear about his cool story on how he became a creativity expert. And we're going to hear about the companies that he has consulted and influenced and how they've been successful and more profitable by being more creative. Let's go. Gotta get it how it goes now. You gotta take it off the nose. It's off the nose. Gotta get back in control now. Let's stop believing in ourselves. It's off the nose. You are the expert on creativity, and so I am so excited about this subject because I think of myself as a creator mindset. For sure. And when I was reading the book, I was like, Nir's been inside my head. And
oh, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's just phenomenal. And I'm super excited to dive into how much is natural and how much is instinctive in us and what we're born with versus we can learn and evolve and all become creative. And I think that's the point, you know, in your book. But first I wanted to start with Nir as a little guy. And was everybody like, oh, he's so creative? Was that you?
Well, kind of. I mean, not really. You know, I you read the book. So it starts off with, you know, being 9 years old and going door to door washing cards in Los Angeles. And, you know, we didn't do a lot of car washing. We actually did a lot of, you know, taking out the trash and cleaning trash bins and stuff like that. And it really set up kind of understanding that in order to be successful in business, you got to be creative. And sometimes the services that or the product that you provide and the way that people consume it isn't always so linear, you know. People think it's always kind of, hey, this is what I have to sell and somebody's going to buy it, but that's not always the case. So I wouldn't say that I was always creative. I was really interested in music from a young age, and okay. You know, I didn't
I see the instrument behind you.
Yeah. I didn't you know, I came to this country not speaking any English, so I gravitated toward music and movies and stuff like that, but you know, it was not really something that you know, that I was, you know, good at. So that's kind of my story.
Creative too, right? And I think everybody jumps to the arts, and
yeah.
Mentioning music because that is how people think of creative. Oh, he's so creative or she's so creative. They're doing arts and crafts when they're young, and oh, you know, and then they might do children's theater, and oh, they're creative. And as we grow up, and you learned it maybe at 9, but you start to figure out that being creative means forgive the old think out of the box, right? But that's really what it starts to become. How do I become more strategic? How do I, as you put it, not just think linear?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and what ends up happening is we're creative as kids, and as we get older, we get it kind of beat out of us. You know, Kelly, like people just don't support it. It's too out there. It's too wild. It's too, you know, something that's not the stuff of the serious. And what I see today, especially with COVID, and all the you know turmoil that we're facing as a country, is you know businesses that are creative are doing great. And you know, you look at how many businesses are doing great out there. It's what, less than 5%? Yeah. And then 95% are struggling. And for me, that's not cool. And we need to sort of inject more creativity into the thought process of businesses on a day-to-day basis in order for people to stay competitive and vibrant and able to ride out all of the change that, you know, is sort of coming.
So are you as hard on people as I am? When Corona first hit, first of all, I think that there's a group of people that just wake up and live in fear. And so they are over here. I would be on the other side. So there is that to consider. But, you know, I'm a squawk box addict. And, you know, you're seeing every CEO come on. And it's like, if I was in your spot, I would be like, not a creative bone in their body. Oh, okay. I like me some Shake Shack CEO. All right. This guy, clueless, you know, and you can just see who is doom and gloom, who is maybe a little too political. And then who is like, let's go, let's pull our pants up and get creative. And there were people celebrating Starbucks, you know, said some locations were doing better in Corona. Why? Because they didn't even have drive-thrus and their managers created drive-thrus.
Right. Yeah. It's there's so much creativity out there if we want to embrace it. But often we don't because we're too scared. Kelly, there's, you know, I run a consultancy and I work with businesses all the time that are too scared to embrace principles that they know will work. Isn't that crazy? I mean, that's wild to me. Why won't they embrace these principles? Fear, ego, reputation. They're worried. Oh, if I take, you know, a leap of faith on this, even though I think it will work and I think my customers want it, you know, I'll be ridiculed or I won't be seen as serious. And the list goes on and on. We have developed the analytical part of our mind so much over the years that we just don't want to think outside of what we're comfortable with. And what ends up happening is we sort of run on a half tank of gas as business owners, as even as in our careers as professionals, we run on a half tank of gas, wondering why we're never getting where we need to go. I mean, you know, you've run companies before. You sort of know, you know, what it's like when you don't inject creativity into the organization.
Well, to me, you don't have innovation. You stagnate. And it's also just not a fun place to work.
Yep.
You know, you want to be, I prided myself. There wasn't a meeting where we weren't laughing. And, you know, blue sky and round table and whiteboarding and, you know, all these things were part of everyday conversation. And you know, I see some companies literally hire people to make sure they're having creative sessions. That's amusing to me. And you probably help them do that. So I'm not making fun of that because I appreciate the energy. But in my opinion, that should be part of your culture. That should be part of every meeting.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't do that. I don't advocate that. I want to teach people how to be creative in their organization. A lot of times when I get called in to consult, you know, it will be under the pretense of, hey, great, we're paying you. Make creativity happen. But then, yeah. You know, what I really do is I try to get creativity embedded in leadership, embedded in staff and so on and so forth so that they can replicate, you know, sort of the creative tenet themselves. And I think that's far more effective than like, we're just going to hire it. Because I honestly, we're just going to hire it, you know, is a analytical construct.
Totally. How do you marry the two, right? Because creativity with no eye to the bottom line is not going to work. So you do want to allow for that space to be creative, but also prove it out in the numbers.
No doubt. So I agree with you 100%. And what I do is I advocate for a balance. You know, Kelly, I think we're so far, you know, on extremes these days. We're either here or we're there. And I see it in business too, with the analytics sort of, you know, dominating so many times. And then I see some businesses that are really, really creative, but, you know, they're run by some guy who lives in his parents' basement, you know, and it's, the ideas aren't really getting to market. They're not being packaged. They're not being positioned right. They're not being, you know, prepared, inventoried and warehoused and all of that very important analytical thing that bring it together. So for me, what I advocate is not throwing away the analytics, but combining the analytics with the creative. And what I want to see is more businesses embracing balance and a center line of, you know, borrowing from both things. What we've done is we're too far on the analytics. Most businesses out there are functioning on cold, hard logic, spreadsheet logic, and data. But I argue that, you know, spreadsheet logic is something that doesn't give you the complete picture of what's going on. I've seen it. I've run companies. You've seen it. You've done the same. And then the, you know, the data is useless unless it's information. You know, it's great to get, you know, this many numbers of customers that downloaded this many number of whatever, but that's just really data. Who are these people? What are they doing? What are they doing before, during, and after they're using our product or service? And those things are constructs of creativity. What I want people to do that are listening to your show right now, Kelly, is sort of bring both sides together. Bring it to the middle and understand that a lifetime of developing the analytics, you're probably okay there. You don't need to further develop that side. You need
no continuing education needed.
No, you're done. You're good. I think what we need to start doing now is to remember how we were as children. We were all creative as children. Everybody's creative. And, you know, we got some pretty impressive people that we cited their research in the book. And, you know, communication skills develop secondary to creativity. That's the first thing. It's who we are as human beings. It's what saved us from, you know, getting attacked by that crazy wild beast, you know, 50,000 years ago. And it still is what will, you know, protect us today. So for me, it's really about uniting both sides and not sort of going where we're comfortable. We're all comfortable in the analytics. It's time to get a little bit uncomfortable in creativity.
So you mention how it starts when we're young. So everybody comes out of the womb with creativity?
Yes. Yes.
So how sad.
Super sad.
We slowly become boring as hell and scared and fearful. And does this, you know, I could go on and on about the education system. I think unless you're in private school, my kids have done both, and the public education system has a long way to go. And so you look at the arts and how they've pulled the arts because of funding and so forth, but even beyond what's on paper, everything is so analytical, right? If the schools want to get money, they have to check the box that they did 18 worksheets and 44 whatevers, and there is zero creativity happening as a general statement in public education at the young level, let alone you hit middle school, high school, forget it. Yep. And then as you reference in your book, the business schools. So schools are a critical part of this.
No doubt. And you know, you and I know we both kind of sat in class or whatever, kindergarten, first grade, and, you know, draw a tree, right? And you drew like a big purple one. I drew a big pink one. And the teacher came by and they were like, you know, Kelly, trees aren't, you know, purple or pink or whatever.
Right.
They were actually, and so we were like, oh, okay. And so it's not, you know, in my opinion, it's not a conspiracy theory or, you know, a tinfoil hat sort of thing. This is really about understanding that we are inclined to shut that side down, and we are inclined to, you know, kind of bury it down because it's not seen as being serious or the stuff of, you know, studious, you know, studies or whatnot. But the truth is nothing could be further from the truth. We need that side of our imagination, of our DNA really to be reflected so that we can do well. And for me, that's really what I've seen missing in so many businesses today. We have our heroes. We have the Elon Musks of the world and the Steve Jobs and, you know, people doing amazing creativity.
Amazing.
But, you know, those are two people out of how many hundreds of thousands of businesses. We got to get better at it.
You know, you wonder. I mean, I'm a big believer, and of course it relates to what's going on in the world right now too, but it does all come back to the home. You know, what kind of culture you have in the home. And then of course the schools become your partner in raising your children. And then when you move on to business or to wherever you choose to work or whatever your career is, the leadership then is setting the tone. So it's really interesting, you know, I guess we should interview Elon's mom and see if he was in Montessori school or if he was allowed to color on the walls or
Yeah, definitely. You know, it really is. It's something that we can do, you know, for your listeners that have children and, you know, work at a school or whatever. It's something that we can do right now. You know, I set out, so I think it's really important to recognize what we're doing when we try to kind of shut off creativity, and even just having a conscious, you know, thought about it helps us reduce, you know, that you know, I don't know, instinct or whatever to shove that creativity
down. Yeah.
Just even knowing about it would really help. I think that, you know, I wrote in the book about how, you know, we're all sort of creative beings, and then throughout life we kind of get it, you know, stifled down. And what ends up happening is, you know, you have a gut instinct that I think largely develops from your creativity, and you kind of stop listening to that voice that tells you what to do. And in my opinion, you get into a lot of trouble. You and I both know we've taken that job with that client that we never should have done because it wasn't a good fit, but we were like, hey, there's going to be a paycheck and we need the money. 100% analytical. And then we were miserable. Yeah, we might have made a certain amount of money, but, you know, it wasn't the right thing. So another thing that I think would be great for your listeners that they can enact today is to start listening to that gut. I'm not saying, you know, override it every time, you know, the gut that tells you to drive for 4 hours and not go home because you know, you don't want to deal with something, you know, that I'm not saying to listen to that every time, but there's voices that are sort of, you know, your gut, your instinct is sort of telling you what to do. And I think that we need to start listening far more to that voice. That's something that people can do today.
Do you talk to teachers, or are you mostly, consult with businesses?
I've never done any work with teachers. I've taught in graduate school and I've taught in undergrad. But I've never done, you know, intensive work with teachers or educators. I would love to.
It would be interesting because they're up against so much pressure. I think that my sister's a third grade teacher, and, you know, teachers have been phenomenal for the most part through Corona. You've seen a lot of cool stories, but I just think there's such a, such a heavy influence on our children's lives.
It's amazing.
Children who are going to become adults who, like you say, need to listen to what's inside, but somebody was telling them not to for so many years.
Right. Right. And it's a shame. And you know what? It's, we grow up, right? And we do the same thing. And we wonder why we're not fulfilled, why we're not happy, why we're not getting where we need to go in our career or business. So, you know, I've been a serial entrepreneur. I've had many companies and I've run other people's companies too. And at every step, I've noticed that the people who do well are creative. The people who don't do well are not creative. And so I wanted to be creative. And literally, Kelly, I looked in the marketplace because I wanted a book that would just teach me how to be creative, right? Is there a book out there?
Barnes & Noble and you went up and down all the aisles?
I went up and down. I looked at all the books. Every book on creativity out on the market right now is about why you should be creative. Why should I be creative? Because it's great, because you'll get new ideas, because of innovation. But there isn't one book about the how. And so I kind of, you know, put some feelers out there and talked to some agents and in publishing and some publishers. And so I wrote it. And the book that I have coming out on August 4th is called The Creator Mindset, and it's got 92 tools of how. And I think it's brilliant because you can just kind of go through it and take what really resonates with you and leave out what doesn't and start to implement today these creative things that'll just give you a little bit of a spark, you know, and the foundation for growth. So I think you're totally right. It's something that we're told no so many times that we kind of unfortunately start to believe it.
Yeah. You have so many testimonials, amazing testimonials about the book from a wide variety of people, authors, you know, generals, entrepreneurs, all kinds of different people. And some of the quotes I found interesting, and I wanted to get your feedback on that. One said that creativity is a discipline. Now, I don't know if they're using your words or if they're, you know, interpreting them themselves. So it's a discipline. So once you learn how to, then you have to have a discipline to do it. You got to put it on a post-it note.
Yes. Yeah. Who said that? I can't remember.
I didn't write down who said it.
Okay. Yeah. So for me, it's a put your ass in the seat and get to work sort of thing. Creativity is not this, you know, I love art and I love music and that kind of thing. But this is not the creativity that I teach. I don't teach people how to play an instrument or, you know, to sip a macchiato with caramel sprinkles and align their chakras or the seven tones of Solomon. That's great if you're into it and it helps you. More power to you. But the creativity that I teach is a discipline. You sit down and you do it and you learn how to develop it by yourself. You learn how to develop it in groups. You learn how to kind of put it together company-wide. This is a practical, you know, sort of discipline that has its basis in trying to take whatever revenue your company is making and maximize profit. I'm a firm believer that free enterprise has done more for societies across the world, not just ours, but anywhere in the world. Free enterprise has lifted more people out of poverty and horrible situations than any other tool that we have. Now, is it the best thing on earth? Like, is it, you know, have we arrived? No. I mean, we can get better at things and constantly, you know, sort of improve. But because I believe so firmly in raising the standard of living of everyone on earth, this is the best tool that I've found. And I've noticed a gap there. We aren't doing the best that we can as businesses. So I feel that the missing component would not just help you and me maximize our profit on our revenue, but it'll help everyone sort of get to where they need to go. That's why I love this stuff so much.
I don't know if you've noticed a difference between public versus private, but from my experience, private allows for more creativity. Although, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I've got some friends in situations where, you know, they're 75-year-old companies and they refuse to change. So I won't mention names, But in my personal experience, it was more creative when it was private situations. Public, you know, the numbers and reporting to the board, and it just became literally all they wanted to talk about was the analytical side of the company. You know,
right. It's tempting.
They didn't want to talk about creativity.
What ends up happening is the more eyeballs that you have on the internals, the more eyeballs that you have on the financials, the more you want to sort of make sure that stuff is squeaky clean, and the more you delve into what you're comfortable with. It really is about stepping outside of our comfort zone as companies, as entities, as professionals, and understanding that what we're doing every day is not going to get us to the next level. Listen, Kelly, I tell this to businesses all the time, and it makes them super uncomfortable. Things only last in a certain band of time. If you've had 75 years, more power to you, you might not have next year. Okay. Yeah. You cannot rest on your ass and expect things to get better or different or change. You need to constantly be able and open to creativity, because that will allow for certain tweaks in the market to extend and extend and extend the time that you're viable, vibrant, you know, and profitable. So for me, it really is public or a private company is really all about understanding that you're only existing in a certain band of time. And moreover, you're only existing in a certain band of time that your consumers will allow, your customers.
Right.
Whether you're a business to business or a business to consumer, it doesn't really matter how you're structured. You are operating under the permission of people who are paying you. And the minute that you stop recognizing that is the minute that you're irrelevant. And, you know, people aren't idiots. Sooner or later, they won't consume your product or your service, and they'll move on.
Warning.
Big time.
It can just happen overnight.
Yep. And people, you know, people always gravitate toward comfort. Why? Because when we were, you know, 50,000 years ago, early man and woman, we were in our caves, and there was a little water source over there, and like a berry with bushes over, you know, a bush with some berries over there, and we were like, we're set. Why would you ever change that? And over thousands of years, that's been ingrained. And today we have, you know, the same reaction to, you know, being, you know, sort of attacked by a saber-toothed cat, you know, than we do on a roller coaster. It's insane how far we've come, and yet we still have these, you know, sort of building blocks of humans' ingenuity, sort of reaction to stimulus that have nothing to do with life or death situations anymore, but we feel it the same. So, you know, we've gone public, and, you know, there's been some scrutiny on a quarter three report or whatever, and we feel like we're going to get bitten by a saber-toothed cat. It's the same feeling, but it's so misplaced. We're not going to get bitten. Everybody calm down. It's time to come up with some, you know, creativity around, you know, how do we position it? How do we, you know, let's admit it, we made a mistake. That's a creative thing. That is not an analytical construct. So
right.
For me, it's really important for us to understand that there's certain programs in our DNA that push us towards comfort, push us away from innovation. And we need to kind of undo them a little bit and just time out, relax, let it go, for God's sakes. It's not the end of the world. Let's look at what happened in the quarter three, you know, release, and then come up with, somebody say sorry. Blow your mind. Imagine that, you know, somebody say, hey, we're going to do a better job next time. We're going to look at it, and we're going to sort of make this shift. We've done this adjustment, and, you know, free Starbucks to everyone for a month. I don't know. It's things like that that really rebuild confidence and allow us to tap into creative potential instead of being so dang scared all the time.
You think most people, that happens when you start to take on responsibility, that fear kind of goes with that?
Yes. You know, we have a self-doubt monster that is perhaps the strongest. You know, when you think of like really strong and like mighty and powerful things, you think of like, you know, nuclear bombs or something. But I think self-doubt is stronger than the biggest bomb, the mightiest army that we have, and it lives right within us. And it's that self-edit that has stopped the world from, you know, getting amazing innovation and amazing results. And part of my mission is to eradicate that. Listen, and it's selfish. Like, I'm going to be honest with you, Kelly, like, you know, I want that doctor working on cancer to not self-doubt what they're doing and go, well, this will ruin my reputation. I want them to go put that report out and spark an idea in another researcher and then connect those three people together that are, you know, and then finally cure cancer. I think we could have landed a woman on Mars by now easily. And, you know, why haven't we? Because it was a scientist or, you know, a researcher, somebody working on something and was like, this is too out there. It's too simple. Nobody will take this seriously. You know, what if I'm wrong? So on and so forth. And that self-editing had led us to not be as robust as a society as we could be. And here we are, you know, and it's selfish to me in a way. I want us to, you know, cure cancer. I want us to do all these amazing things so that, you know, my life can be better.
Right. Well, all of us, right? I mean,
totally.
Another comment before I go on about that. The CEO of Observatory made an interesting comment. You know, when you're in the corporate world, you're always talking about generating value, right? And I'm guilty of it. Two of my favorite words, efficiency and productivity, right? And so he says that's how he thought you generated value. And now with reading your book, Nir, he is seeing that value can be creativity.
Yes. Jay Goodman's a good guy and a very, very smart guy. I was very, very lucky to have him read the book and give some feedback. The nature of business is constantly changing, and the things that were valuable yesterday will not be the things that are valuable tomorrow. Kelly, you know this. You've run very successful companies. You know that you need to stay on your toes. I wrote, you know, in the book, several case studies of complacent companies. I could have filled many volumes of books, and the editor was like, you have to pick the three that you like the best. So I picked three. They're not, you know, in any means, the ones that I like the best are just kind of the ones that were picked for the book. And, you know, if you're not constantly changing and you're not constantly evolving, you're not constantly trying new products, new services, new manifestations of these products and services, you're gonna hit a wall sooner or later. And that value that you create is a through line all the way to your customer. They appreciate that you're trying. We're so like closed off in business that we don't want to be honest and vulnerable and transparent with people. But the companies who are honest and vulnerable and transparent are the ones that do the best. What the heck is going on here? We need a different way. We need a creative way.
I think that, you know, in doing that, because I'm one of these people, if you want to go for it, and if you want to throw ideas out there, and if you want to accept that one of 10 might work, but I'm still going to put all 10 out there, right? You do have to accept that you're going to get flack.
Yes.
Right?
No doubt. You're going to get some heat.
It takes a strength. I guess when you coach, you're also coaching that side of it. I mean, you've got to be strong. And now, depending on who you are and what level of leadership, with social media, you can get a smackdown real quick. And you've got to figure out how you want to handle that, you know?
No doubt. Crisis and communication, sort of creativity in crisis, relies on a lot of things, and you are going to get into some hot water as you start to innovate and as you start to change things. You know, sometimes you'll get into really hot water, but you know, not being able to do that. So it's really a road that ends either way. So you have to be able to be accepting of the fact that, you know, some of these ideas will get shot down and some of them might not perform well in the market. But again, having that transparency and that understanding is essential, because you need to try these things anyway. If you take the road that you're not going to do anything, you're going to go out of business. Do you take the road that maybe you'll try some of these ideas and you're scared? Yeah, maybe a few of the ideas won't work, but it's way better to try something and to do something than to just, you know, go back to what's been working before.
That's right. I was a big believer in buy-in. So bringing groups together, I would bring groups together that were unlikely contributors to a given conversation. And some of the best ideas came from those people when you put them in a safe space, so to speak, to be able to throw it out there. And when you get that buy-in, there's a little less fear that it won't work because you're not dictating as a leader. This is what we're going to go do. I just pulled it out of my ass and it's creative, but we're going to try it. You know, every once in a while you have the, I guess you can do that, but I think it's better when you get a group together. Everybody has a voice. Of course you make the final decision and you go, but you got everybody bought in.
No doubt. And that's, you know, hats off to you for having that vision and that courage to do so, because that is really what's going to move the company forward. And when you do those things, you see that they're, you know, you excite people, you create an environment where, you know, creativity can manifest in all stages. It's not just enough to be a leader and say, you know what, we're going to be creative. You have to get buy-in. You have to get people excited about the idea and then let them go out and branch it to their department. And then it's one of those cascading waterfall things where you see a company's vibrancy and joy, really. You know, Kelly, like, we don't talk enough about joy in business anymore, but we need to, because it's got to be fun and it's got to be, you know, at least something that somebody pursues in a sense of happiness.
Right.
When people are happy, they totally and things. Yeah. And, you know, in that happiness, we get, you know, people that are excited about coming to work and excited about contributing and, you know, excited about having their ideas sort of tried out. And that, I think that's incredibly, incredibly important. Yeah, you're on the right track. Buy-in is incredibly, it's a precious sort of resource.
So have you seen, I mean, because I think we all agree, okay, we're born with the ability to be creative and it kind of gets sucked out of some of us. It depends if we had hippie parents or what school we went to, or if we avoided business school, could have been a good thing as it relates to creativity. And so whatever your path was, you know, you worked for that shitty boss or you had a boss that was like, let's try it, right? Everybody has a different path. But from your experience working with companies, do you have an example of somebody that you're almost like a proud papa, you know, that they really... followed the how-to, like this guy was a board. I mean, he's a numbers guy, didn't have a creative bone in his body. He is drawing a brown and green tree. That's it. You have a situation that,
you know, I did a recent, just before this COVID thing, I did a talk at a restoration, disaster restoration conference or whatnot. And, you know, I had a guy come up to me afterward and he was like, "Nir, great. Great lecture. I mean, it was fun. It was pretty funny, the whole deal. And, you know, but I'm not creative. I mean, come on. Like, I get it, but no way." I'm like, "Really? That you know, that's what you came up to tell me?" Like, "Yeah. And to be honest with you, you know, I'm a straight shooter. I was like, "Okay, what do you got? What's on your mind?" He was like, "The hour that you were up there talking, the whole time I was just thinking about how many emails I had to get out for proposals." I'm like, "Dude, you're an analytic kind of guy, you know?"
I know, guys. He's like, "Oh, yeah.
Oh, totally." And I said, "Okay, let's talk a little bit." He's like, yeah. I said, "How many, what proposals are you getting out?" He's like, "What do you mean, what proposals am I getting out? I'm sending out proposals." I'm like, "Okay, how many of them are you closing?" He's like, "I got that one." He's like, 23%. I said, "Okay, that sounds pretty bad." He's like, "Why 23? That's industry standard." I'm like, "Are you happy with industry standard?" And then he was like, "No." I'm like, "What do you want to close?" He's like, "Well, you know, I'd like to close 30 or whatever. I can't remember the numbers, but it was something like, you know, 7, 8, 10% higher than where he was at." And I said, "Okay, what do you think you need to do to get there?" And he's like, slipped right back into it. He was like, volume, you know, another analytical construct. Yes. And I'm like, okay, let's get, so we kept talking. We ended up doing some consulting together, and I started to zoom in on his process, right? A process, analytical construct, but not when looked at creatively. So I started to say, okay, let's look at your, so he's like, okay, we've been using the same damn form for 10 years. I'm like, okay, is it working? He's like, 23% or whatever. Sign up. So it's working, right? I go, yes, but it's shit. Let's look at it and like really try to get those numbers up, and let's do it from a creative sort of perspective. So I started working with him and trying to figure out like what these issues were. And it turns out that his billing model was like all inclusive, but people wanted to buy a la carte. Why? Because they wanted control over certain line items. So I said to him, dude, let's do an a la carte. Let's just try it. You don't have to like switch the entire company. You've got 100 trucks and 2,000 employees. I get it. But let's just try an a la carte model. And so they went out and they did an a la carte model. Yeah. And sure as shit, Kelly, they found that everybody bought the whole damn package, right? So they felt controlled, you know, in whatever they were ordering for a drywall restoration or fire or flood. Sure. They bought just the base package, most people. And then they saw the employees. They liked it. They added on. So he was getting way more value, way more potential for profit from that revenue. And then we started looking at other things, and all of a sudden, you know, he's calling me or sending me emails going, hey man, I'm really creative. I added a new tagline to the website, you know, and this is like a diehard, true and tried analytical sort of person. And, you know, yes, it's good that you added a new line to the website, and it's like coming together for him, and he's, and his company started to understand that, you know, in the seedlings of failure and even the seedlings of the, you know, 23% that did sign up, well, what about the, you know, what about the other people that didn't? And in that is incredible creative potential. Let's go in there and see what we can do. Little tweaks, little, you know, I found out that he hadn't gone on a house call in like 10 years. He hasn't seen a customer. You know, he's like, near. I have people that do that. I'm like, no, you know, like get out, like enough Excel, like let's get on the road. Let's go see some people. Let's talk. And he started talking to people and realizing that the way that they're buying his product and services changed, and he hasn't. So they changed the form. It's now like a paragraph, and it's more like a conversation than it is a proposal. And, right. You know, people felt an easier attachment to it. So that's just one story that recently happened, but there's lots and lots of these stories where creativity can help people in real tangible sort of bottom line ways, but we just have to be willing to try them.
Yes. And surround yourself with great people. You know?
Totally.
So it doesn't have to all be on you. If it doesn't come natural, if you sleep with your Excel spreadsheets, I get it, but at least try to surround yourself with people and encourage that kind of environment, and then you spark each other, right? You wake each other up.
It takes courage. It takes courage, and sometimes that courage means just trying it a little bit, or on a select market, or in a select territory. Just giving it a little bit of a shot will help Kelly sometimes in a tremendous way, even if it's not really affecting the financials that much. But smart business people on the analytical side will realize that, hey, hold on, in that territory, that's going up because we're doing A, B, and C. Let's start to replicate these processes across the organization to slowly start lifting the potential. And that is creative, man. That is the stuff that I live for.
And, you know, your nerdy guy can feel like a rock star.
Totally.
Girls think that's hot.
Yeah, right?
See, you'll get all kinds of new attention. One of the things you talk about in your book that I like, well, there's quite a few, but the virtue of listening.
Yeah.
That's a big thing for me because even if you don't feel like you're capable of being creative or you're afraid or whatever, if you listen, the creativity will come.
Totally. Yeah. You know, there's so, and this, the podcasts are a little weird for me because I don't do this much talking ever. ever. And, you know, I usually listen and I want to find out what people have to say. The subtext of what somebody says and how they say it, how they approach it, Kelly, is gold. And we're so busy like literally when someone else is talking, we're thinking about what we want to say next instead of listening. And you know, sort of viewing the social cues and the subtext and all that stuff is gold and incredibly valuable. It's something that your listeners can do today, Kelly. Like they want, you know, they want to become more creative. Okay, I'll dip my toe in what this wacko near is saying. It's kind of okay, but I'm super uncomfortable. Okay, I'll start listening a little more. That's something you could do today. And just quiet, listen a little bit longer, listen to how people are saying something, and sort of derive value from it. It's an incredibly powerful tool.
Agreed. And when you listen, even if you like your spreadsheets, you can start to hear, oh, multiple people are saying the same thing. That's a trend. Okay, maybe I can jump on that now. So you can bring the analytical in and feel comfortable. So transitioning to what's going on in our world today and all the challenges, I would say we need creativity more than ever. You know, the political system, the choices that we have coming up in 4 months, you know, I'm going to say no offense, but there is offense. I mean, we got, you know, a 74-year-old and a 78-year-old. We got an 80-year-old and a 78-year-old leading Congress. I mean, I don't know how creative you still are. I hope I am at that age, but the fact that we don't switch people out, you know, you can just, you know, start in Congress and die in Congress. And it just kind of goes against what we're talking about today. And I think, you know, you and I certainly, and a lot of people would agree, a more creative world is fresh perspective. It's open minds. It's how you innovate and social change. It's the only way it happens, actually. The virtue of listening, all of these things. So how would you apply creativity to what's going on with racial injustice, you know, and certainly the politics around Corona and the two-party system, and it's just like the same old, same old.
Yeah, you know, the founding fathers never wanted, you know, career politicians. They were hoping that people would come into office after having, you know, some local impetus, you know, honorably serve and then go back to their work. And if you read the Constitution and you sort of, you know, read John Locke and the people who have really sort of created the system, you will see that a lot of it is centered around enterprise, you know, farming or whatever it was back then. But it's centered around enterprise. They really wanted somebody to go work, start a company, or be, you know, a great sort of a professional in the field, do that for a while, gain some popularity, gain an opinion that would help the country on social matters, represent for a while, right? And then stop representing and then come back and go back to work. Literally, that's how it's written. So I think we've gotten a little bit far.
Not go get a $60 million book deal?
Yeah. So it's wild what's been going on. And it just, the intent has really changed, from how it started. And, you know, here's the thing. I think that with everything going on in the world, I think that the creative values of empathy, the creative values of vulnerability, and the creative values of listening and realizing that, you know, empathy is not just about understanding what somebody else is going through, but really it's about, you know, understanding how they are viewing what they are going through. And I think that, you know, having embedded creativity in what is going on will enable us to have wonderful solutions and wonderful sort of next day outcomes. Listen, what's going on right now in the U.S. especially is, you know, the U.S. working. I mean, people don't like it, and it's scary and it sucks, but it literally is working to some degree. Is it the best? No, absolutely not. But right. is it a system. Listen, if something like this were to happen in another country, and I don't want to be disparaging, but I could name a few offline if you'd like. There'd be like people, you know, armed. They would topple the government. There'd be, you know, some military in charge. But it's happening in America, and I think we could sustain these things because I still think that at the bottom of everybody's sort of soul is an understanding that this is a country where these things can kind of happen and not sort of, you know, ruin everything.
Destroy and, the foundation. Right.
Right. And, you know, it's okay that these things are happening and it's okay that things are getting redefined because that is what the founding fathers envisioned and that's what we have today. What I really like about this crisis, if one could even like anything about it, Kelly, is the amazing sort of fast tracking of a lot of deregulation in,
yes,
especially in medicine. So I have several friends and you know, there's a heavy section in the book about medicine that, you know, are really, you know, proponents of regulation and, you know, government sort of oversight and stuff like that. But what's really interesting is that tends to be okay, but not in my industry, right? So people want the oil and gas, the energy businesses to be regulated. But if you're in oil and gas, you don't want it to be regulated because you know what the regulation's doing. It's driving up costs, you know, and the whole deal. So what we have here with coronavirus, right, we have medicine that's traditionally very regulated, now sort of deregulated to get trials out. And you have a lot of people in medicine going, this is the best thing ever. Ever. And what I like about it is sort of a creative outlook, which enables people to understand that, you know, maybe when you're so upset about regulation in other fields, maybe it's time to do some listening and less talking and let the people in those particular fields, energy, manufacturing, so on and so forth, define for themselves what, you know, what they can do and how they can contribute when they are less regulated. So what do we have? We have Moderna, we have several other pharmaceutical companies, Johnson & Johnson.
They're all working.
Coming up with a vaccine in record time. Is the vaccine coming? Yes. Is it going to be great? Absolutely. Is it coming sooner or later? I don't know. But this is a direct result of allowing creativity to thrive without some governmental agency stuffing it down, some analytical oversight stuffing it down. And that's a wonderful thing.
Equipment. I mean, look at all these companies that converted their lines and
amazing.
It's amazing.
Yep. Yep. And we got to let people do those things. The populace will be the judge. Believe me, at the end of the day, you know, you can only lie to the public. You can only lie to your shareholders. You can only lie to, you know, whoever's consuming your product for so long. If that's what you do, you're going to get caught sooner or later. It just is what it is. And people are not idiots. They'll stop buying your product or service. And so you start to have, you know, a sense of honesty, a straightforwardness. Develop without oversight. You don't need, you know, some governmental agency sort of cracking down on people. You need these companies to be held accountable by the people who consume their products.
Yeah. And, you know, if we can be creative in our voices rather than just angry,
yep,
and try to be more intelligent and use some creativity, it's okay. There's so much emotion right now.
Yes.
I think it's hopefully starting to calm and we're starting to have real conversations that,
yep,
need to be creative and people need to be able to step out of their fear and throw it out there.
Kelly, it's all about returning to the center a little bit. We've gotten so stratified on either side of the aisle, on either side of the brain even. We need more centerist thinking. We need more creativity. We need more sort of balance. We've gotten so far out of whack, right? And when things are not in balance, they tend to, you know, create sort of a lot of resonance and noise and just unease. I think we need to move more to the center in everything that we do. and really sort of listen to what creativity has been telling us and apply these things on our, on a day-to-day basis.
I agree. It's my hope for schools, businesses, politicians, but mostly, you know, you look at those sweet little kids and, you know, I know you have children and I have children and a lot of the audience has children. And it's like, man, just think in your own home, are you creating an environment that allows for creativity, or are you judging and correcting and pinning them in and showing them one path to a future when there are hundreds of choices, yep, that we all should be able to make. So I think that this is a great topic. I don't think we're done talking about it. So the creator mindset, it comes out in August. Super excited. I wish you the best as it launches. And you've given us a lot to think about today. I hope everybody goes and does some good listening today. They get creative. They shake it up. Get out of their head, right? It's totally Friday, so that should help.
Friday helps.
Friday helps. Thanks, Nir. It was great having you on.
I really appreciate it. This has been a great interview, and thank you so much for having me on.
Good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Be safe.
All right. Better change up your perspective. It's something new.
Hope you guys enjoyed the show today. Remember our little talk before the show? Yep. Don't forget to subscribe, like, follow, share, all that jazz. It matters, people. You matter. Thanks again for listening. See you soon.